Okay, so we are a little bit ahead of schedule. So as I mentioned to Chair Wolf at the break, we're going to move a couple of items up, or we'll see when you want to break for lunch. The first one is going to be irrigated. It's item number 15, Irrigated Lands Regulatory Program Update, Annual Compliance Form, Management Practice and Data Summary. Item 15 is the Irrigated Lands Regulatory Program Update. We periodically provide a summary of enrollment and implementation of the agricultural order to the board. Over the course of the next few board meetings, staff is going to provide summaries of key irrigated lands program activities. Today, the staff will provide enrollment statistics and a closer look at best management practices tracking reported in the annual compliance form. The staff report includes an attachment summarizing groundwater monitoring and reporting. Chris Rose and Elaine Shaw will provide a brief presentation.
Good morning, Chair Wolf and members of the board. My name is Chris Rose. I'm the Irrigated Lands Program Manager here in the Central Coastal Region. And annually, we provide you a summary of the Irrigated Lands Program and compliance. And so here we are again this year in 2014. And to my left today, we have Elaine Saul, and she's going to present a PowerPoint presentation summarizing the compliance.
Happy to be here to present to you today. And I will start out with the summary of program compliance. We'll just jump right in. So as Chris mentioned, we have provided the summary of compliance table annually to the board, and we plan to continually update this information and provide it in the future. Included as part of item 15, we did include a supplemental sheet, which is the agriculture order summary of compliance table. I will be highlighting specific requirements from the summary of compliance table on the next slide, so you may want to go ahead and pull out that summary of compliance table and follow along. In general, you will notice on the summary of compliance table on the next slide that the levels of reporting continue to increase and are very positive. Growers are very diligent about continuing to report and update their information. And lastly, staff will continue to use the summary of compliance table to follow up past due requirements as they are evaluated. So this is the summary of compliance table. It's not as clear as I was hoping it would be on the actual slide. Moving from the left to the right, I will explain the columns that are associated with this table. The left-hand side, we do start out with the tier columns, and those are the tiers that are associated with the specific farming operation. We have 1, 2, and 3. The next column, we have the actual agriculture order requirement that a farm is required to report on. The next column is the reporting level, and the reporting level is mainly either at the operation or the farm level. Keeping in mind that one operation can have multiple farms enrolled underneath it. And the remaining columns on this table report out information for specific compliance years. You'll notice we have 2012, which was the start of this current agricultural order, 2013 and 2014. Some of the numbers that I will mainly be reporting out on is the column that refers to in compliance percent. And that's one of the first shaded columns in each of the reporting years. To further highlight some of these specific compliance areas, I am going to go through approximately 3 specific requirements. The first one being the requirement for all tiers 1, 2, and 3, to enroll by submitting their electronic notice of intent in GeoTracker. In total, for Region 3, we have approximately 435,000 irrigated acres that are required to enroll in the agricultural order. You'll notice in 2012, the compliance rate for reporting was at 94%. And if we jump to the 2014 in compliance rate, you'll notice that it also is 94%. So we have maintained a very steady pace from the beginning of the agricultural order to the last reporting period of 2014 for growers to enroll. I'll highlight another specific requirement in regards to compliance, and that is a requirement for Tier 2 and Tier 3 farms to submit their annual compliance form. You'll notice that all of the compliance information is populated for every single reporting year. So in essence, growers have been required to report the annual compliance form since the beginning of the agricultural order. In 2012, the compliance was at 75%. If you jumped to 2014, the in compliance rate is now at 89%. So we've seen a 14% increase from the beginning of the agriculture order in regards to growers submitting their annual compliance form. One of the last requirements I'll highlight here briefly is the requirement that a subset of Tier 2 and Tier 3 farms record and report total nitrogen applied. This requirement is very significant, especially as it is associated with its current compliance. 2014 was the first year that growers were required to record and report total nitrogen applied. Of the 467 that were required to report this information, 100% of those farms reported. Again, this is very significant as this is the first year that growers have been required to report this information. I will highlight that the requirement to report total nitrogen applied achieved that 100% compliance rate in two ways. First, growers very diligently updated and reported on their total nitrogen applied. And additionally, Water Board staff has done follow-up, including email and phone reminders, and in some cases, notice of violation letters where growers failed to comply by the initial reporting period. So that is the end of the first topic of this presentation. At this point, I will move on to the second topic, which is the actual annual compliance form and the water quality management practice assessment. But before I actually get to the water quality management practice portion of this presentation, I do want to give you a little overview of the annual compliance form in general. And I'll start with the purpose. So there are three main purposes that Water Board staff see for the annual compliance form. And the first one is that it provides growers with an opportunity to report on practices they are implementing and assessing. And I think this is a very important purpose because the annual compliance form is one of the main ways that growers can demonstrate that they are implementing that iterative approach, that they're implementing management practices, that they're assessing whether or not they work, as well as it gives them the opportunity to report out on any outcomes they may have achieved. The second purpose is that the annual compliance form provides Water Board staff with up-to-date information to assist in the evaluation of agricultural waste discharges. So in the annual compliance form, and you'll also see in the next slide, some of the information we collect helps us to evaluate agricultural waste discharges. And one of the last purposes of the annual compliance form is that it helps Water Board staff to evaluate progress towards compliance. So again, in addition to growers being able to demonstrate progress towards compliance by telling us the practices that they're implementing and assessing, Water Board staff can take that information from the annual compliance form and determine compliance. So as I mentioned, I will be focusing mainly on the water quality management practice section of the annual compliance form, at least in regards to assessment. However, I do want to relate that there are many different and important sections in the annual compliance form that growers do report information out on. The first of which is the primary source of irrigation water. The second is an area where growers actually calculate their groundwater nitrate loading risk. And that's an important component as that information is used to determine whether or not growers are required to report total nitrogen applied. Growers also report out information on discharge characteristics, information on whether they have irrigation, stormwater, or tile drain discharge. They also can report out on water containment characteristics, water quality improvement projects, and those can be improvement projects either at a regional, local, or individual scale. And lastly, what we'll be talking about for the remainder of this presentation is the water quality management practices section. The water quality management practice section in the annual compliance form in its current state has been available since October 2013. And I mention this because the State Water Board order that was adopted in late 2013 amended the agricultural order and in essence also amended the water quality management practice section in the annual compliance form. Prior to October 2013, we did not collect information on assessment or outcomes. Now we do. So because of that State Water Board order and the amendments to this section, staff now has one full year of data to assess, and we will use this as a baseline for the future years. Within the water quality management practice section in the annual compliance form, there are four main reporting categories. There's nutrient management, irrigation management, pesticide management, and sediment management. And underneath each of those four main reporting categories, growers can report and select many different practices that relate to practice implementation, practice assessment, and practice outcomes. Practice implementation is where growers can report out on those best management practices that they're implementing to address water quality issues. Assessment selections, defined as those practices where growers are assessing a specific method to determine whether their implementation practices are effective. And lastly, the outcomes are defined as areas where growers are able to demonstrate or identify that they have actually reduced or eliminated their waste discharge from their farm. And these sections and management categories will become a little bit more clear. I'm going to proceed and show you the actual annual compliance form water quality management practice section that growers see and submit to the Water Board. There's going to be a series of four different snapshots, and really the takeaway that I want you to get from these snapshots is the amount of selections that the growers are able to choose. The first selection category is implementation, then we have assessment and outcomes. And this snapshot here is just for nutrient management, but we also have irrigation management practices, pesticide management practices, as well as sediment management practices. So again, reiterating that this management practice checklist or these management practice selections really allow the grower the opportunity to tell the Water Board what they are doing and how they are implementing or engaging in that iterative approach. To help summarize all of this information, Water Board staff has completed an assessment, a general assessment of all of these practices within each of the main four management categories of nutrient, irrigation, pesticide, and sediment management. And for the remainder of this presentation, I will be focusing on a series of graphs that demonstrate the level of acreage that is implementing a specific practice as a grower reported it on the annual compliance form. So the first management category I'm going to focus on is nutrient management. And you'll notice the graph that I have here is just in regards to implementation. On the horizontal axis, you'll notice that there is a series of numbers as well as letters. And that refers to the specific practice as it is denoted in the annual compliance form. For instance, This specific graph refers to nutrient implementation, NI, and the letter refers, or excuse me, the number refers to the selection on the annual compliance form. Number one starting with the first selection, and number 14 being the last selection in that category. The vertical axis refers to the total crop acres that are implementing a specific practice. So if a grower selected NI02, which is the nutrient implementation second selection on the annual compliance form, you would see that there's approximately 215,000 acres that have reported that specific practice. I'll also note on the vertical axes that it maxes out at 250,000 acres. And that refers to the total Tier 2 and Tier 3 farms that have reported water quality management practice data for the October 2014 reporting period. In the upper right-hand corner, you will notice that there is a large number. That number currently for this graph is at about approximately 1.5 million. And that refers to a baseline number that Water Board staff will use in the future. And this baseline number is essentially the sum of every single management practice for implementation, for nutrient implementation that growers have selected on their annual compliance form. And we'll use that numbers in the years ahead to determine whether we have an increase or a decrease in nutrient implementation over time. I will highlight the highest reported plot practice for the nutrient implementation section, which it appears to be NI03, so the third selection on the nutrient implementation section. For that specific selection, growers have stated that they have scheduled fertilizer applications to match crop requirements. And I'll also denote this first column here, NI01, the first selection, because that is an area where growers have stated that they're not doing anything. There's none. They have no implementation. And what's good about this area is we don't have a bar there. So that means the majority of growers have stated that they are implementing one or more nutrient implementation practice. So as I move forward with these other graphs, they're going to look very similar. The only difference being is that the horizontal axis will now refer to either the assessment or the outcome category, and the baseline information, the number up in the right-hand corner, will have changed. So for this nutrient assessment graph, I will highlight the most highly reported practice, which is NA11, so the 11th selection, which states that growers consulted with a qualified professional to assess practice implementation. So that is the most highly reported practice assessment for nutrient management. The baseline acreage, so the total sum of all implementation, is at approximately 500,000 crop acres. And I will note here, though, that you will now see that in this first selection box, which states that growers have not assessed anything, we do now have some acreage that have reported that they are not doing any assessment. The last graph in regards to nutrient management is the outcomes. Again, the most highly reported practice is NO03, nutrient outcome, third selection on the annual compliance form. And that relates to growers stating that the total nitrogen applied as fertilizer and in their irrigation water matches the crop need. And the baseline has been established at approximately 290,000 crop acres. So now I'm going to go on to the other series of graphs for irrigation, pesticide, and sediment management, but I'm going to move a little quicker, seeing as we kind of understand the basic format of these graphs. For irrigation implementation, the highest reported practice kind of is neck and neck. There's two of them, practice number 7 and number 8. But I will highlight practice number 7, which is stating that growers maintain their irrigation system to maximize efficiency and minimize losses. And the total baseline acreage is listed at approximately 1 million crop acres are doing some type of implementation in regards to irrigation management. Moving on to the assessment graph, the most highly reported assessment practice is that growers stating that they walk the perimeter of the property and cropped areas to verify that irrigation runoff has been reduced or eliminated. The established baseline for irrigation assessment is at approximately 533,000 crop acres. And again, these baseline crop acres will be used for future trend analysis on a regional scale. The outcomes for irrigation management, the highest reported is growers saying that the volume of water applied matches the crop need. And the baseline is established at approximately 340,000 crop acres. Pesticide management, again, very similar graphs, just some different reporting information. The highest reported pesticide implementation practice is PIO5, which is growers stating that they followed the specific label instructions in any local use codes when they were applying their pesticides. And the total baseline acres is at approximately 1.8 million acres, meaning approximately 1.8 million, there's a sum of all of the pesticide implementation practices that total that baseline number. Pesticide assessment, it's very easy to determine which the highest reported selection is, and that is growers stating that they consulted with a qualified professional to assess their practice implementation. And the baseline for pesticide management is at approximately 217,000 crop acres. For outcomes, the first selection here on pesticide management is none. Growers have stated that they are or have not achieved any outcomes. So that is the highest reported for pesticide outcomes. And again, I forgot to mention on some of those other graphs, it's really important to still note that the first selection on each of these graphs relates to none or not assessed. So we do see an increase from implementation, assessment, and then finally outcomes in regards to growers saying that they are not assessing or not implementing any type of outcome. And finally, the baseline established for the outcomes for pesticides is at 138,000 acres. And the last series of graphs in regards to the management categories is sediment. The most highly reported sediment implementation practice is that growers stating that they align rows for proper drainage and to reduce erosion, which is this SI08, this bar right here. And the established baseline is at approximately 1.3 million acres. For assessment, again, this one is very easy to spot, the most highly reported practice. And this practice is growers again stating that they walk the perimeter of the property to verify that erosion controls are in place and that sediment doesn't leave the farm either during a storm or an irrigation event. Baseline for sediment management is established at 335,000 crop acres. And the last graph I'm going to show you is for sediment outcomes. The highest reported sediment outcome is the first selection, which is none. So for sediment outcomes, growers have stated that they are not implementing or have not achieved any outcome. The established baseline for sediment management outcomes is at 190,000 crop acres. So I will say, after viewing all of these graphs, one of the takeaways that I do want you to have is that growers are starting to engage in the iterative approach. They are implementing management practices. We do have some level of assessment, as well as we do have some level of outcomes, and growers are reporting these in their water quality management practice section of the annual compliance form. So with that, I will leave you with a few conclusions, and then we'll move on to some next steps. Water quality management practice baseline has been established. So all the information in those graphs that you've seen establishes a regional baseline for which water board staff can use in the future to determine if growers are implementing more or less implementation assessment or are achieving outcomes. The annual compliance form is also an important reporting tool. And I touched on this briefly, and in regards to this annual compliance form is really an opportunity for growers to report out on everything that they're doing on their site-specific farm to let the water board know how they're achieving their water quality objectives. How are they addressing their water quality issues? Additionally, the annual compliance form is also an important reporting tool for staff because it is one of our only reporting tools, or one of our main reporting tools, that allows us to assess whether or not growers are continuing that iterative approach of implementation, assessment, and are they achieving any outcomes. And lastly, I'll refer you to this last bullet point, which has to do with the first topic of this presentation, which was the summary of compliance in the agricultural order. I do want to leave you with the takeaway that the levels of agricultural order reporting remains positive and continues to increase. And staff does expect to see increasing compliance as we move forward for the remainder of these years under this agricultural order. And my last slide is in regards to next steps. Water Board staff, we do plan to schedule some workshops in the near future. At these workshops, we do plan to speak to growers about general compliance-related information, such as their electronic notice of intent and annual compliance form reporting. We also do plan to share the information, such as this annual compliance form water quality management practice assessment. This baseline data, we do plan to share that with growers as well, including those areas where maybe growers are reporting none for implementation, assessment, and outcomes. We will highlight those at these workshops. And lastly, we do plan to do some prioritization efforts. We'll be pulling in some data, such as the electronic notice of intent data, annual compliance form data, and water quality monitoring data to help us prioritize those areas where we may want to follow up. And most likely, based on the prioritization efforts, we'll focus more on a sub-watershed or an individual farm scale. So with that, we are open to any questions you may have.
So before you take questions, Mr. Chair, I want to reiterate what she said and why this information is very important. One is the water boards for a long time were criticized for, well, not criticized, but we've tried to focus on outcomes. You know, what are our programs doing in terms of water quality? And this is part of that explanation, is understanding what is and is not being done and not everything has to be done necessarily, but it's important to understand what is and is not being implemented. Then comparing that to the water quality data so that we can figure out with the growers and the ag community what needs to be done, what's working, and the effect it's having on water quality. So it's critical. This is very critical. The other thing is people always say, well, what are you doing with the data? And staff analyzed several hundred thousand pieces of information to generate those very simple graphs that she just showed you. So that gives you a sense of the power of GeoTracker and the data system that staff has been able to put together. So just a couple of comments. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Harris. And I will start on my left with Mr. Johnson.
Well, I must say I'm impressed by the climbing level of compliance with participation and with reporting. I was pretty troubled by the baseline concept and the way it was laid out. I mean, let me give you just one example on sediments, where the most common practice was for the grower to say, the farmer to say that they had walked the perimeter and assessed that there was no sediments leaving the farm, but a significant number of acres reported that they had done no assessment. Well, if next year 50,000 acres move from the no assessment column to the I walked the perimeter column, that doesn't change your number at all, because you're just adding up how many boxes were checked in each section. And I mean, I know it's a really tricky problem for us, because you know, we can tell people what outcomes they're supposed to achieve, but we're really not supposed to tell them what methods they use to get there. But it still does seem like, and I also realize that, you know, while it would be tempting to simply prioritize each of the boxes and weight them and say this is a, clearly it's a better, it's a more effective assessment measure to walk your perimeter of your farm than to do nothing, you know, and try and weight them. And that's maybe the crudest example, but the reality is in farming, it's really site specific. And while maybe that one's appropriate, a lot of these other things, it's very hard for us to weight on a regional level what's the best practice that's gonna have the most positive impact and the one that's gonna have the least. So, yeah, I mean, but I'm still pretty troubled by an approach that says we set a baseline by adding up how many boxes were checked. I mean, some of these things are, when we look at irrigation practices, I would be amazed to see that any number of farmers didn't check the box that said, I put on the appropriate amount of water for my crop. You know, I took into account my crop needs in irrigation, or, you know, I took into account my crop needs in fertilization. So, I mean, is there, it just seems like so overly simplistic a rating system, I'm not sure that the data means much.
Well,
and I wonder if there's a way to weight it more.
I think staff can, if I don't say this correctly, is these are best management practices that we didn't invent these. I mean, these are used by the industry, recognized, I assume, by USDA. A lot of effort went into identifying which practices we want to see implemented. So they're actually more, I think, more significant than you're giving them credit. And then secondly, they remember we're also doing, we have our monitoring programs too, which are the other side of the story to help us determine. You're right. That may be that some of those practices just aren't significant in our region and aren't giving us the bang for the buck. But without knowing what we're doing and then doing the water quality monitoring, there's no way for us to tell.
Right. I'm troubled by the fact, though, that, for example, doing nothing, checking the box that said I did nothing, moves the needle as much as checking the box that said I walked the perimeter of my ranch.
Actually, it doesn't. It's not included in the baseline acreage of implemented acres. Yeah.
That's all right.
Right.
I'm just wondering if there's some way we can weight it so we can somehow, you know, get a little more useful information about what best practices tie to what results, so we can, I don't know.
Yeah, no, you're right. Obviously, you know, there are some practices that if I had my choice, if we had a nutrient problem or a pesticide problem or whatever in different areas, that we could probably cherry pick which practices are are better than others. Nevertheless, these are 118 practices or so that were taken from UC and other in other areas in other sources that people wanted them in the annual compliance form so that they wanted to get credit for them, basically. That's one thing. The other thing is remember that we're not assessing compliance on a regional level. Yeah, we are trying to establish a baseline so that we can come to the board annually and say, how's it going? When you ask us, how's it going on the implementation, assessment, and outcome? So we have something to talk about. However, we are not assessing compliance with the order on a regional level. We assess compliance on the individual ranch level. And that's where really the rubber meets the road. And if you, if for example, that's all somebody did is they checked the box where they said, I walked the perimeter, but they did nothing else, we're obviously gonna see that. And we're gonna be able to take a look at that in conjunction with other information that we have, other data that we have coming in, the water quality data, to say, okay, what are your specific problems on your ranch? Which management measures are you implementing and assessing and doing the outcome to address those specific problems? That's the individual level that we're really not talking about here yet today. We're just on a regional scale, sort of how's it going? Are people implementing practices? Yes. Are they doing an assessment? Yes, but not to the level, frankly, that we would like to see, you know, on a gestalt sort of level. And how about measuring outcomes? Are they doing that? Well, even less than assessment. So generally speaking, I think that we can take a look at this information and make some generalizations on a regional level. And that's really all we intend to do with it. Okay.
And before I ask my next colleagues, I wanted to supplement the fact that we cannot forget that the expert panel still has, you know, to get all their feedback provided to state board, and all this still has to be fleshed out. So there is that work in progress in terms of how they interpret, you know, the value of various BMPs, et cetera, and their role in the ag order. So Mr. Delgado, Mayor Delgado?
Sure, thank you. I think this is a monumental effort, and we've come a long way in the last couple of years just getting this information and being able to have staff do such a comprehensive job tallying it, keeping track of it, and the participation, the communication that's going between the growers and our board is a different order of magnitude, obviously, shown by this. Some questions I have. First one is sort of the trust with government. I might be inclined, if I had a farm, to check all the correct boxes. And in talking with all the growers that you're talking to, do you get a sense that they're complying because they have to, and they're doing so in a minimal way so that the government stays off their backs in the way that they think that that would happen? Or do you think that they're doing this with a high caliber of quality?
So I talk with growers, many growers, on a daily, weekly basis, specifically in regards to the annual compliance form. And I really do feel that we need to give the benefit to the growers because they are really trying to report accurately out on what their site-specific conditions are. So growers are really trying to report what pertains to their operation, not necessarily what the water board wants to see.
Okay, thank you. There are some numbers here that are 100. There's a couple of 100% non-compliance numbers. Can you explain that? Looking at the summary of compliance, report surface water from individual monitoring, and it shows a consistent 100% non-compliance. Why is that, of those 44?
So that specific category of non-compliance relates to those growers that selected individual surface receiving water monitoring. For whatever reason, they decided they did not want to join the cooperative effort conducted by Central Coast Preservation, Inc. So they have not submitted any water quality monitoring data to date. However, I will highlight a few things in regards to this area of noncompliance. The first of which is is you'll notice that those number of operations that are required to comply that failed is 21. And that's 21 out of a total of almost 1,800 operations. So it is a small amount. Additionally, you will notice that the prior year, 2013, the number of operations that failed to comply was 46. So Water Board staff has been following up in this area to ensure that growers, first of all, understand what they selected, understand what individual monitoring entails, as well as the fees related to individual monitoring. One of the follow-up actions that Water Board staff has commenced is referring these individual accounts to the State Water Board for billing of their permit fees for the agricultural program. When we referred these accounts to the State Water Board, they are invoiced for increased state permit fees. So if these operations had chosen to join the cooperative, they would have had paid reduced rates. So there is an incentive in some cases as part of that follow-up of growers receiving these State Water Board invoices for them to then elect and switch to go over to the cooperative option.
Okay. Is the number reduction from 46 to 21 due to joining the co-op, or is it due to petitioning to change their tier so they're no longer required to do it?
It's mainly because they switched to go to the cooperative. They received that State Water Board invoice for the first time, realized they did not want to pay increased state permit fees, and elected to join the cooperative effort.
Okay. And of those 21, ballpark estimate on your part, are those large growers, small growers?
I would say the majority of them are small growers, with maybe the exception of a small, like one or two.
Okay. If I'm a large grower and I don't want to join the co-op and I don't do my individual monitoring, in your experience, is that because I'm a grower that's just saying, I don't like any of this stuff and I'm not going to play along?
There is that potential, yes.
I mean, potential, but you've had interactions, I suppose, or knowledge of.
Yes, I would say that we do have a few that have elected not to participate in the cooperative effort at all. They choose not to. And so the only other option is individual.
And so if they choose not to do the individual reporting requirements, that is that indicating they're just sort of recalcitrant to the whole concept? Is that an experience that you've encountered out in the field or with your communications with these growers?
I would not say that they've been recalcitrant to the whole concept of reporting for the agricultural order, just mainly that they don't want to participate with the cooperative monitoring program with Central Coast Preservation Inc.
Okay, I get that. But since they're also not doing the individual surface water monitoring, what's the take home about that?
So what I will say that even though we're not receiving data from those 21 operations, we are not seeing any data gaps. And the reason for that is because the surface water monitoring program is still submitting data on a quarterly basis to us. And they're submitting that surface receiving water monitoring data predominantly in agricultural areas for which these 21 operations would be within.
Okay. My last question is, of these baselines you showed us, are those your plan for the total of baselines, the only baselines you plan on tracking? Or given your data, can you give a lot of baselines? Like let's say that we wanted a baseline of sediment management where they were doing something other than none. Wouldn't you have that baseline readily available for us as well?
We do have all of that information available. Again, the information provided today was just really general information. We do have all the data that we can get results out either on an individual basis or for what, like you said, you know, for a specific practice that or a specific implementation area where they may not be doing anything.
Okay.
We have all that information that is included as our baseline.
So at a future date, if the board found it really important to know the trend of a particular component, there could be a baseline future and out year comparison.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. I did have one other tiny question I didn't remember until now. On the summary of compliance form, it it shows 435,000 acres in three places as being, it sounds like that's the max you can have. That's it, that's the total out there. But then there's baseline numbers that are higher than that. How
right.
do we get the higher numbers?
So that baseline is the sum of all of those specific selections that a grower reported on their annual compliance form. So a grower could have reported more than one implementation practice, so then those crop acres would add up.
All right, thank you very much. Mm-hmm.
Dr. Hunter?
Hi, thank you, Lane and Chris. So to follow up on that individual category, I'm confused by the differences in numbers where when you hop down to the next individual category, which is report groundwater monitoring, now we're seeing some larger numbers there required to comply. What is the difference between the small numbers of 46 and 21 above for report surface water monitoring? I don't understand why one is such a small number and the other one is multiples of that.
So I'm assuming the first one you were talking about was for surface receiving water monitoring, the 46 versus the 21 number. And
No, I'm sorry, let me restate it. So if you look at surface receiving water monitoring and then hop down to report groundwater monitoring for the individual, then when you look at those numbers in comparison to the 46, you see 842 for domestic drinking water well and 1579 for agricultural well, and then in 2014, it's roughly that same neighborhood. Why are the numbers so different there?
So first of all, the reporting level reported out in this table is different. For that individual surface receiving water monitoring, or even, excuse me, the cooperative groundwater monitoring, it's reported out at the farm level. Whereas the groundwater monitoring for individual, we have reported it out either via domestic wells or ag wells. So the numbers are not comparative for the groundwater monitoring component and versus cooperative and individual.
Okay, that helps. And then I see that from 2013 to 2014, compliance is actually going up for the individual group on groundwater monitoring. And what do you attribute the increase? Is there more technical assistance or more labs available that are, you know?
I think it's all the above. Staff have put a lot of effort into getting growers to comply with the groundwater monitoring requirements, as well as I think the more awareness that growers have of that specific requirements. In the past, a lot of times they would assume that groundwater monitoring was the same as surface water. So now they're able to kind of divide those two requirements apart and really able to focus on each individually. So I would say that it's partly staff as well as growers just understanding that requirement.
Okay, great, thank you.
Ms. Cervantes?
Yes, I just had one question regarding the progress towards overall compliance. You mentioned that there is a first sort of reporting deadline. Are you all keeping track of how many on each of these various categories meet that first reporting deadline, and then sort of what the lag time is between sending out letters or doing some other kind of contact to get the others to report?
So just to kind of recap your question, it's in regards to whether or not we're tracking those growers that fail to comply after reporting requirement.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say that we do, but informally. We're always utilizing the specific compliance information that we have here on this table, and we do prioritize that for follow-up. So if we determine that there is a specific area we want to follow up, we will focus more specifically on areas of progress for that specific requirement, such as maybe, for example, enrollment. If by October 1st, only 90% have enrolled, we will track that extra 10% and determine what type of follow-up we'll need, such as notice of violation letters or phone calls.
And the reason I ask this is just in terms of being able to, for us, evaluate the length of time that folks perhaps, or growers are indicating they might need to report on various categories. It would just seem like if there's a standard date for reporting on these various categories, understanding where there might be a need to extend a date sort of further in the year so that people can have sufficient time to report.
Thank you, Ms. Cervantes. I think I see where you're going with this, and I appreciate it. Well, we found that with a lot of these compliance requirements, many of the growers, or mostly growers, they know when the compliance date is, and they're busy. They're just simply busy. And typically what we'll do is we'll send an email, a couple of email reminders out. Remember, you have to update on October 1st, or remember, this is due on such and such a date. And consequently, we get a flurry of activity after those emails. And then the date comes and goes, and then we'll send another email to say, you forgot to, basically. And then we get some more activity. And then finally, we have some holdouts, and then we will send a slew of notice of violations, and that really triggers a lot of activity. So it seems to me that even that just reminding them that the date is coming, that is passed, and that now you really have to do it, they need those constant reminders. And it's not that they need more time. I just think that they're just busy, and they have a lot on their desk, and we have to be the squeaky wheel to make sure it gets up to the top.
Ms. Thomas-Burke.
First off, I want to congratulate staff for doing the monumental task and growers for reporting for this first year, because implementing a new program is very, very difficult. So great job. The next statement I have a bit of concern for the wording. The first year of this reporting, implementing a new program, there's a lot of work that had to be done. And as time goes by for the second reporting year, not only the growers, but also staff can figure out how to fine tune this. So is there a possibility that staff could use the first and the second year as a baseline? It makes me a little nervous to use just the first year when everybody's trying to figure out how to do it as a baseline. So that consideration would be huge in my book, having implemented programs such as this before. And the third statement is, I have one more after this real quick, is, the date for submitting, how did that date come about? Because I know for a fact that at least the Salinas Valley growers have an extraction reporting date that they have to report also, but it's at the end of the month. So have you ever considered coordinating the report date together? Because then they have to do and focus everything at one time. And based on my meager knowledge of this, my understanding is some of the same numbers that they use for their conservation reporting and best management practices are also used for your program. So that would make sense that the deadline might be the same. Now, would that benefit the whole region? I would say majority of the growers it would, at least for the Salinas Valley. And then finally, the question of reporting the results and data. Are you going to have a published report, a synopsis of the results to post on the web so not just the growers will see these results, which they're very interested in, see the results at the workshops, because if they don't go to the workshops, then how do they get the information? So would there be a deliverable that you would put forth annually to be able, for everyone to see it on the web? Thank you.
Sure, thank you. I can address each one of those one by one if you'd like. this is the first year reporting, you're right. Maybe we should use a subsequent year as also as the baseline.
Correct.
We can certainly do that. The book hasn't been written. It's not written in stone. However, I will say, however, that again, like Ms. Saul said, it looks like we have a lot of implementation activity, which is really good news. You know, it's great news.
That's very good news.
Yeah, it really is. And when you look at the assessment and outcome, I think that there's some improvement to be made there. And so if we were to use the first year, then presumably subsequent years would look even better if we were to use the first year as a baseline. But again, we're not opposed to changing that up and taking a look at what subsequent years bring. And that will be part of the whole workshop too. I think part of the emphasis of the workshops is that we want to really emphasize to growers that this is called an annual compliance form, but I've really been kind of toying with the idea of maybe in subsequent orders and so on, maybe we have something called an annual progress form. And this is their opportunity to basically tout what they've done. And so again, we're not opposed to taking a look at changing up the baseline, whether it's this year, next year, a combination of the years. And again, our initial efforts is to get the growers to realize that this is serious and this is their opportunity to tell us about the progress that they've been making, which is of course part of the iterative process towards showing progress. That's what we're trying to do here. The date for submitting. It's my understanding that when the order was finally adopted in March 2012, and that the date that was chosen for October 1st as being the update day, that date was really bantered around a lot, and that there was no real great date that satisfied everybody. But this is the date that basically satisfied the most. So that said, it was written into the order. So we can't change that date now without changing the order. We would have to change the order to change that date at this point in time. But, you know, and again, we can look at that, and that's something that we will need to look at in subsequent orders. Finally, is there going to be a published report? We will publish this PowerPoint presentation. So basically, we're going to take this information on the road. That's one thing. But then the PowerPoint presentation will also be published on our website. And what we found is that communicating with growers is obviously very important for us, but we need our partners in the technical service provider industry. And part of the workshop effort and outreach effort will really have to include them, because we just don't have enough staff to be omnipresent in the field, and we need them to help us help the growers. And so we'll be communicating with them and sharing results with them.
If I could add just a couple of things. The October date, the order predates me, but my understanding is it had to do with when leases change. Everybody's lease changes on October 1st, so that was the reason for using that date. I also want to make it clear to both the board and to the audience is that what we showed you today and the data that we're collecting and the way we're analyzing it is not in any way meant to be punitive or to send a negative message. It's just to measure how things are going so that we can continue to improve it. So I don't want anyone to walk away today thinking that we're being critical of ag or what they're doing. Our goal is to work with ag and to continue to improve how the order is implemented and ultimately improve water quality. It's just that simple.
Just a quick one.
One question that occurred to me, and I missed it. In the annual compliance form, for the four categories, is there an option that says I'm doing something else so that if somebody is developing something innovative that might trigger other people to consider this new practice that's coming up out of an individual farmer dealing with specific conditions, as Chris mentioned?
Yes, there is an other category for every single selection category of implementation, assessment, and outcomes. And we instruct the growers on that other category to describe what they're doing in their farm plan.
Are we seeing anything popping up yet?
No, we haven't requested any farm plans. And we would mainly look at those farm plans when we're out on inspections at this point.
However, as you know, we have some projects that are pretty interesting going on in the region, like the Wichita bioreactors, which could potentially be treating whole sub watersheds for nitrogen.
Thank you. I have two speaker cards before we wrap up this particular item. I had a maybe from Mrs. Weinman. Is it a? I think she gestured that she had upgraded that to a yes. And then I have Mr. Schimmick. Are you upgrading a maybe to a yes?
Yes, sir.
All right. So I'll start with Mrs. Weinman.
Hi, good afternoon. My name is Claire Wyman, and I'm the president of the Grower Shipper Association of Santa Barbara and San Luis Obispo counties. I'd like to welcome the new board members. It's the first time I've had the opportunity to speak with you. We do represent a variety of memberships, including growers, shippers, farm labor contractors, and supporting agribusinesses. We've absolutely been a partner in implementation and in providing assistance with compliance with the order. And since the order was adopted, we've had over 12 workshops with over 500 attendees, a series of how-tos at each particular step. Wanted to mention that we've been working with staff to improve the nitrogen reporting. There are a lot of bumps along the way, especially with that requirement, and have had some great discussions and hope that this will be a smoother process and that everybody is a little bit more on the same page for this upcoming fall deadline. And so I would like to thank them for that and look forward to those improvements. We're definitely still processing the baseline assessment. This is the first time that we've seen that in the trend analysis. I think we definitely need to think about that a little bit more. I think none of us maybe saw the intention for that information to be aggregated on an industry-wide basis. I think we're thinking that it would be a little bit more an iterative approach on an individual farm or ranch basis. Look forward to the PowerPoint being posted so that we can look at that a little bit more. I did want to speak briefly to the question about if people were checking other, and a lot of people haven't because there were concerns about whether that would then introduce the farm plan as a public record, and so a lot of people have been reluctant because of that ambiguity. And so I think there is a lot of innovation that's happening, but not necessarily being reflected in that particular box. Also, I wanted to mention, I think it's really important to keep in mind that as we're looking at the number of boxes that are checked, each individual practice can have innovation within that. So as the additional information becomes available, as technological advancements are occurring, people are refining what each of those things means, whether that's irrigation technology or the ability to monitor soil moisture or even the fertilizer technology that's available and the ability to understand and then implement that information. I also wanted to mention that it's going to be different every year, the different field conditions. So I do expect that we'll see some fluctuations depending on the year. Finally, I just wanted to mention that we're looking forward to continued discussion on the implementation of the order. It's very much a part of our lives, and we're looking forward to that. And I think that this really highlights the opportunity for third parties to provide that on-the-ground analysis and follow-up to improve water quality, to be looking at all these different factors, sitting down with the farmers and having those discussions. So wanted to thank you and thank staff for their collaboration on the nitrogen reporting forms, and thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Mr. Schimmick?
Good afternoon, everyone. Steve Schimmick with the Otter Project in Monterey, Coastkeeper, and as usual, thank you for your service. In spite of the raise given to Mr. Wolf this morning, you know, you guys are underpaid. In fact, you're not paid, or I think $100.
I'm going to give my raise to Mr. Harris anyway. So.
I'm going to cover four things very quickly. One is the compliance spreadsheet. Two is the outcomes. Three is the tiering. And four is what is compliance. So first of all, on the non-compliance or on the compliance spreadsheet, the things that struck out to me is, first of all, what was already talked about, and that's the report surface receiving water monitoring for the individuals, the 40 going down to 20 people that did not report. What's troubling to me about that is that if NOVs are not issued to those people are essentially thumbing their nose at the system, and you're incentivizing those people because there's no they don't have to participate in the cooperative monitoring program. They don't have to do it themselves, and therefore you're incentivizing that behavior of not participating in the program. The second place that struck me was the groundwater monitoring individuals, specifically in the wells. What you have here, even though it is improving the percentage of people in noncompliance still after the third year of reporting, is still 25%. That's over 200 farms that are not monitoring drinking water wells and are not notifying the people that are drinking that water that their water may or may not be good or bad. So even though that number is improving, I think that is a place that you need to pay attention to. Three is the photo monitoring, which is way back in 2012, 33% non-compliant. The next thing that I want to mention is the outcomes. One of the order that was passed in 2012 actually did a much better job of requiring people to talk about their outcomes, as I recall. And a lot of things have happened since then. That was a while back. But as I recall, what was passed by this board is that people actually had to talk about their outcomes, and they had to base it on their actual numbers. They actually had to describe why they thought things were getting better and give the numbers, give some actual metrics of why they thought that. And it was the state board in a negotiation that I was involved in that reduced it down to just check boxes. And frankly, that is part of our grievance with the state board. Three subject. The third subject is the tiering. And if you go way down to the bottom and you look at report individual discharge monitoring, you see 14 farms are required to comply. Now that's your tier three farms that are discharging into waters of the state. And so what I want to remind people of is that this is a discharge permit. And we're asking for discharge information from 14 farms out of the thousands. I just entirely think that's inadequate when we're talking about this being a discharge permit.
And you need to wrap up, Mr. Shimmick.
So just two very quick points. One is if this reflects a decline in the number of tier three growers, we've had this issue before of where is that reported to the public, and so that we can comment on those the tier change changes that are happening, and perhaps I've missed something. So finally, let's keep our eye on the ball of what is compliance. Checking boxes is not compliance. Complying with water quality standards and improving water quality, that's the goal. That's compliance. Thank you.
Thank you for your comment. So this will conclude this item. My personal observation is that this is the first year. There's been a lot of working progress and tweaking and adjusting, reflecting on some of our NPDS, for example, regulatory permits we have. We don't have 100% perfection. We do have stragglers, and we have to address those. I would suspect that DPR experienced the same. I would suspect that the Division of Water Rights doesn't have 100% compliance with their permits and submittals. So I think, personally, I see progress, and we certainly need to keep raising the bar, and thank you for your good work. We will have now a closed session, but Mr. Harris, should we reconvene at 2 o'clock? What's your suggestion?
Yes, I think 2 o'clock, and okay. Council will comment on the closed session.
Yes, please do.
The board will be meeting in closed session. The items are listed in item 25 of the agenda. The closed session items are number 12, South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District, number 14, petition of Central Coast Groundwater Coalition, and number 15, Samora versus Central Coast Water Board, That's also referenced in the petition in number 13, which has now been resolved.
Excuse me. I have a comment card regarding closed session.
And while Lori's doing that, lunch will be upstairs in the usual room.
This is closed session, so I'm sorry, I'm not going to allow, you know, comments now. You're welcome if you have items as a public comment to comment, but, you know, closed sessions, we usually do not discuss.
I understand it is the prerogative of the chair. My name is Jeff Edwards, and I wanted to point out that item number 12 under your closed session is misnoticed. The case number is not correct. So I would like to present that information, as well as some additional comments. Your case number 12 does include the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District versus the state and regional boards. The case number listed in your agenda is the San Luis Obispo Superior Court case.
Folks in the back, we're still in meeting.
There's been a change of venue in this matter, and it's been assigned to Sacramento Superior Court, and your case number is 34-2012-8000-1209-CU-WM-GDS. And as you know, this all stemmed from a December 19th, 2010 spill at the South Sand District, released some 400,000 gallons.
We are aware of a situation. Please be specific.
What I'd like to explain, Mr. Chairman, is that the Sand District has made two settlement offers in connection with this lawsuit, and this is something that really needs to be resolved as soon as possible.
This is a closed session item.
I understand that. I just would like you to understand that that offers have been made, and the fine in question is $1.1 million. The Sanitation District has spent almost that defending this, and the comparative responsibility in terms of this spill largely fell on the county, and they're not even a party to this. So the county of San Luis Obispo. So I would urge your board and the state board to settle this as soon as possible. Thank you.
And just for the record, the item notice is adequate to allow the board to meet in closed session on this item. We'll correct that typographical error for future agendas, but it doesn't prevent this closed session.
Yes, and I hope you took note on the 12 digits case number. Thank you very much. Okay.